Okay, we'll start off with the tune that we took a poem by Rumi with it, and I'll end with that as well. I'll just do the one. You'll hear me hailing you from inside the open grave, and you'll realize how we've always been together. I am the clear conscious core of your being, the same in ecstasy as in self-hating fatigue. I am the clear conscious core of your being, the same in ecstasy as in self-hating fatigue. That night when you escape the fear of snake bites and all irritation with the ants, you'll hear my familiar voice. See the candle being lit. Smell the incense, the surprise meal fixed by the lover inside all your other lovers. About the shroud and the graveyard road dust. Those things get ripped up and washed away by the music of our finally meeting. That looking. No room for form with love this strong. No room for form with love this strong. No room for form with love this strong. Beat the drum and let the poet speak. This is a day of purification for those who are already mature and initiated into what love is. There's more to want here than money and being famous and bites of roasted meat. Now, what shall we call this new sort of gazing house that has opened in our town, where the people sit quietly and pour out their glancing like light, like answering? Now, what shall we call this new sort of town, where the people sit quietly and pour out their gazing like light, like answering, like light, like answering, like answering. Thank you.
son. Next up, can we have Mr. Joe Sweeney? Joe?
Then he got up, and welcomed it with outstretched hands. Now the sun's rays bathed him, his whole presence seemed to be of light. Then he departed and walked briskly in the direction of the practice. W came into the waiting room. He could not believe what he saw in there. It was like a wood, trees of all shapes and sizes. He didn't know what kind of trees they were, but they were all coming out of some weirdly coloured suspension that seemed to move and quiver every time he lifted it. He suddenly began to be aware that he didn't know where the door was anymore, and the trees seemed like sentries posted that scouts on the lookout for something. He went right, he went left, he went up, he went down. Panic began to run up on him. Where was he going? What was he doing? There was no way out. He was lost. Ready for you now, came an ugly, high, but firm and masculine voice. W followed the tone and entered another room. A long and slight arm waved him to the awaiting chair. W sat on it and faced Dr. Williams. W launched into his spiel straight away. It's like this, doctor, it's my heart. There's something wrong with it. Where do you see it, Dr. Williams, both like son? W looked up in fright. The pain is, no, your heart. W staring at Dr. Williams' nose had a strange sensation that was actually moving. It's down here, W muttered, pointing in the down direction of his stomach. The doctor gestured to statues that were placed in front of him on his desk. W hadn't noticed them before. The doctor's voice began to enter in and out of W. Look at the statues. The statues began to look at W. They were coming to him, flying all around him. He thought, where have they gone? There were figures standing, shouting, sleeping, sitting. But they weren't. They were sleeping in and out of different positions. W couldn't follow it. It was all ephemeral, except for the smell. All he could do was smell all kinds of smells, from the fragrance and scent to the aroma and wax. And all the time, he felt that his nose was running away from him, and he could hear the faint murmur of disease. They were talking somewhere in Dr. Warren's face, something about heartbreak. Dr. Warren was looking down upon him as he said, well, that's all for today. We'll do some more work on your heart soon. Dr. Williams left the practice. The butterflies were back. They fluttered lovingly in the sunlight and made magical patterns around the long sleeves of Dr. Williams. Dr. Williams wore the coat that shimmered in the fragile wings. The swans eased their way through the beautiful river tides, their serene heads raised upward on the wavelength of their natural existence as they gazed. The fish pool sparkled with the love juice of light proportional memories that flooded the eyes of the doctor. The bird sounds enlightened one as he felt the vibration of the mental chords of their notes, tried and tested in their song, and he went through the opening of their belonging that was known only to him.
Next up we have Jennifer Matthews.
I'm going to say a poem that I've said here before, so forgive me, but it's the first time I've tried to say it without the paper, so your patience is appreciated. Okay. This is called Scavenger Hunt. Priceless is useless nowadays, it's survival of the egoist. This is the age of the scavenger, holidaying on the cheap in former war zones, taking excursions after natural disasters. I fill the tank with dinosaur bones and fly there faster. I crave blood diamonds to scratch worth onto my precious days, their hard light refracting in rainbows over the stones of stone temples. Elgin thieves, and I pay my fee to take honeymoon photos of history. I surf strangers' pages and ignore my neighbors, and instead of taking a moment for some soft act of creation, I feed on some old carcass broadcast by a global TV station. Thanks very much.
It's the first time kids have done that, isn't it? Yeah? Well done. Hey, spoken word poetry, you know? And next up, a master of that, Mr. Billy Randall.
Hi. So,
by T.S. Eliot, Usk. Do not suddenly break branch or seek to find the white heart beside the white bell. Glance aside, not for glance. Do not spell old enchantments that in sleep gently dip, but not too deep. Lift your eyes where the roads dip and the roads rise. Seek only there where the grey light meets the green air, is a hermit's chapel, a pilgrim's prayer.
Next up, Patricia Walsh.
Right, can you hear me? This poem is called Fighting Over Longitude. When the oasis was sophisticated, it was not. The eyeball switched to heaven and promised to save the planet by way of weights and measures. How will you fare, master the self-fulfilling prophecy of failure, even before the battle's begun? Tweaking into submission, the smart bombs of creation, of a nuclear summer spreading everywhere. There is a small question of eating and being eaten, of lying on the shite pile long after pleasure is gone. The longitude of the world is being defined by luminous blue lines, somewhere in London, I even think it is. This is a treasure look once fought over, right down to either the last inch or centimetre according to your own hard opinion. Small measurements of age, creaking the skyline feats of engineering, to saving us with precision. A little left, maybe, no, to the right, perfect. And this one is called Favorite Fruit. Provided my brother didn't use his weapons of biomass destruction, let me tell you of a secret past disappearance. Come this July, I denounced all. It was big decent again. Although as all the people got, this news was greatly indifferent. Not to worry, but absolutely worked to my benefit. I didn't have them all to myself. Up to one at the cross, it was unmistakable pinky red glory, feebly defended by needles of thorns, but nonetheless had a habit of lodging underneath the fingernail. The damage there was done, nonetheless, the strain never used watch telling was whatever resisted our gluttony. Although the bushes across still exist, the road has, long ago, been obliterated into cemetery by the hedgehogger. Just as well, for across is now territory for my young cousins, needing instructions as to how to reach and not get thorns in your fingernails. Thanks. And this last one is called The Edible Alcoholic. He squats by the table and weeps, like a melting glacier. This Christmas, the echo of his family's resignation collapsed on his tearful knees. The city is carpeted by light stem. The empty cans are just road navigating. The saving of yourself from what you have lost, keeping bundles under heat control. Death has to come from somewhere. Home from home to a home from home. Ishka Baha is the nature reward for keeping our little change in our pockets. Stiff, as ruddy, scarred as you have lived in a borrowed coffin, a borrowed pot, mourners chewing up for their share of shadows numbing to pleasure of survivor stories, and those on the dry, the horror of healing would rather spare, while in time for a new wet hospital, in the meantime, finding comfort below zero. Being edible, life is short. There is no purpose left except to die. Being an empty fool for the more fortunate. Pushing abstinence, drinking sacramental wine. Thanks.
Next up we have Niall Herriot.
Hi everyone. A very short story I wrote last week. Maybe a bit of a fable for our time. It's called The Pulitzer That Got Away. The turbaned old Pashtun throws his hands up in despair. If we support the Taliban, NATO planes come and bomb our villages. If we support the government and NATO, Taliban come and cut off our heads. What do we do? He looks at me as if I know the answer. But I'm just a journalist, reporting on yet another half-forgotten war in yet another dusty, impoverished third world country. Catch 22, I say to the village chief without thinking. Catch 22? You mean Osama and Mullah Omar and the others? Catch 22 and there will be 222 to take their place. Yes, I say, it is strange they have not been able to catch them over the last 7 years. I wonder where they are. He waves his hand in the direction of the huge mountain range to the east. They are over there. Why did the Americans not help the Pakistanis go find him? Instead of bombing our villages and killing our women and our children? Yes, I wish I knew, I said. My grandfather fought the British in the Khyber Pass. My father joined the Pakistan Army and fought Sikh soldiers in the Punjab. I fought the Russians in the mountains around Kabul. My son was in the Mujahideen fighting the Taliban. And now my grandson says he is going to fight the Western soldiers when he can hold a rocket launcher. The more things change, the more they stay the same, I say. The village chief strokes his white beard and looks puzzled. Oh, it's just the same, the French have, I remark. Anyway, tell me more about Bin Laden. Over there, in the mountains, sometimes. And sometimes they say it's in the city of Quetta in Pakistan. It makes me think. There is a long pause. What is it that you think, I say? Could it be that they need to have him alive and running from one place to another place, like a fox? Why? So they can have their war of terror. On terror, I say. Oh, never mind. Maybe you are right. So, do you think the Taliban will win in the end? When the West gets tired of this war? He shakes his head. Inshallah, no. The people do not want them. They are cruel and unbending. All the people want is peace. If Allah wills it. And an improvement in your lives, I say. So you don't have to grow all those puppies. I gaze out on the fields of innocent looking red flowers, from which so much misery and death is flowing through the cities of the world. The Talibs take most of the crop, he says, without paying. And in other places, the warlords take it. Some people in the government also. Somewhere in the back of my brain, the Pulitzer Prize for Journalism is beckoning. Can you get me to Bin Laden through your Pashtun friends over there in the mountains? He laughs. That would be dangerous and very expensive. You will be well rewarded, I say. I haven't a clue how. He looks at me and it seems to be partly with amusement, the wrinkles in his face creasing around the shrewd eyes, and partly with pity. Then he scribbles the phone number on a little piece of cardboard and hands it to me. He gets to his feet with a remarkable lightness and indicates that the interview is at an end. A week later, I am quaking in Quetta with a blindfold around my head while there is murmuring going on behind me in several low male voices. Is this it? Then the blindfold is removed. Sitting in front of me is the familiar figure of the world's most notorious terrorist. Or is it? The long, serene face, the beard, the white garments are there. But the face is plumper and somewhat darker than I remember from the photos. The sweat runs down my face. He smiles. Bring tea for our guest and a glass of water. The next half hour is something of a blur in my mind. I remember stock answers to my questions, similar stuff to that which had emanated from Osama bin Laden over the years. Jihad, Sharia law, an end to oil neocolonialism, blah-de-blah, a just settlement of the Palestinian issue, and so on. But something seems not quite right. I feel instinctively, however, that I should go along with the whole thing. I'm not going to challenge his identity. A matter of keeping one's head, I feel. So that's how I come to be queuing here in the Dole office. My bank account has been cleared out by those crooks in Quetta. That village chief in Afghanistan is probably laughing in his big beard. My boss has refused to cover me for the amount I have lost. And now, because I've threatened to sue him, I've been given a sack. On the grounds of total incompetence, my boss says. And of course, these days, the trade union is a thing of the past. At least in the paper I worked for. It's tough being a war correspondent, and so much for that Pulitzer Prize. The really annoying thing is that I just heard on the radio that a US official is quoting CIA sources to the effect that Osama bin Laden is in Quetta.
Thank you. Thank you, Noel. Next up is our converted family, Celine.
If he doesn't give you his number, go through his friends if you know them. If not, did he tell you what team he played for? Then Google it. Put his name into Bebo, on Facebook, on MySpace, etc. No, then did he tell you where he worked? Then use the yellow pages to track him down. Once the number is got, there is no turning back. Then let the stalking begin, where you will lose all your dignity intact. Now you take 1 yard, armed with mobile, €20 credit, and 10 boxes, and let the textual relationship begin. Now it's important to note the various types of texts, the fiction texts, along the lines of, so what are you up to, or are you out tonight? Despite appearing innocent, this message is usually sent at 3 a.m. This would be translated as, I'm drunk, horny, and having colds, and in need of some loving. The success of such a text depends on the amount of alcohol your victim has consumed. The pre-launch text, sent around 9 p.m. to the victim just to check his availability, if you don't pull. While sending the fishing test, you are probably also doing the one-eye test. Focusing has become more difficult, if not impossible. But far from being deterred, your alcohol-fueled brain discovers you can remain focused on the message if you close one eye. Now you're out, you're drunk, and your mobile is in your hand. Your friends tried to take it off you because 5 hours earlier you requested that no matter what, they were not to let you use it. But you protest, and you're becoming very scary, so they back off. Your hair is back combed off your face, and your lipstick smeared all over your face. You're ready to go, let the text and take place. Are you out tonight? No response. So you send it again. No response. The male is usually in bed with his girlfriend, in bed with his boyfriend, has pulled, or is about to get a restraining order out on you. Now, you used an oops, didn't mean sending that text, and tried to make him jealous and hold a response. It goes like, hi, Lucy, scored with Peter tonight. No response. Why aren't you texting back? Nothing. Are you odd with me? Again, no reply. If the victim is your ex, you get angry. I can't believe you're such an asshole. I thought we would be friends. This one definitely does not get a reply. But now you're fuming. Your answer? I hate you. And I hope your dog dies. Well? Then, in a brief moment of sanity, you realise what you've done. Then you send this. I didn't mean it. I love you so much. Did you hear me? I'm sorry. Please reply. Nothing. Anger again. So your friend told... Then you send, my friends told me you were a bastard. I hope you'd get hit by a bus. At this stage, your friends drag you home. You cry for 3 hours, then fall asleep. As you wake in the morning, you register your mind, you remember, oh fuck. You vow never to drink again, but seriously, sure you didn't. We drink, we text, we lose all grace and dignity, and all our self-respect goes out the window. But sure, it's the life of a single girl with all your style. It's just part of it. No matter what, even at least once, you'll all drink and die.
Thank you, Denise. Next up to the mic, Mr. Gene Barry.
Thanks very much for the first night. It's pretty outstanding. This poem is called Perfect, that's in P-U-R-R-F-E-C-T. The cadre of night punishers slipped in again and dipped their toes in my sleep, sending ripples of restlessness to torment me. Before the rivets of peacefulness have been driven home, they have landed a cortege of worries. I wake and canter, another sleepless hour. With eyes closed, I am a scaffolder, a carpenter, a tiler, busy building my dream home. I wire and plumb and sweep and grin. Eyes open, I lean forward with the ease of a master thief and kiss your sleeping shoulder with the caress of a pint pudding publican. I knit my gaze to your sleeping pore and doff my cap to the foolish notion that introduced me to this hour of thought. This poem is called Laura. Yep. My daughter Laura. When you left for Dublin, as the beautiful woman you are, I wasn't there. I wasn't there like the many times over these last 7 years, and I wanted to see your smile as you were leaving, and to donate a father's hug and kiss, and to slip you a few bob. A mule would have held me for that week. So I wrapped myself in guilt, and instead I sent you love and wishes, fit for a loyal queen. I visited your photographs more frequently, and played your voice over and over. Your exiled spirit I placed in each title volume, and I treated myself to a peep. I searched for your hand at so many different heights, no grasp did I find. When the unfeeling world of work invited me back so soon after you were born, I wore your love like a cloak. I couldn't stop smiling. I replayed the time I left you in our house when I went to pick your mother up at the shopping centre. Jesus, you weren't with us 2 weeks. I was riddled with guilt. Yet I knew it wasn't a punishable offence. I loved you more. I wore your whistle with the exuberance of the Marys on Paddy's Day, with the aura of a breastfeeding mother. I planted your waiting childhood garden and weeded out the foes and torments of buckling schoolyard punishers and clear the rocks of influential paganism. I sought adventure and ambition, a meadow of encouragement. These days you are my Pangerbon of 19 years, a harvest of genius and imagination, a bucket of love and understanding. I have bribed your guardian angel to saddle you a lifetime of safety. Thanks. Last call. It's a phone call and to visit on the self-explanatory, I suppose. An orchestra of emotions hammered down my door, its music erupting dormant unfamiliar feelings. The sadness of an empty wardrobe waltzing the loneliness of a childless clothing. I moved among the debris, feet falling, floors of their bedrooms decorated with discarded clothes, such rich possessions. As battles, flames, soldiers fall in crumpled, complex heaps, they remained unmoved, untouched, yet still equipped with dawn of smell, its laughter, its pain. And like an aircraft investigator, I drift respectfully around and touch each painful reminder. As it would their hair, their hands, their souls, their lips. So many wounds, yet no room to mourn, to explain. Uncontrollably I wept and smiled, hurt so hurt, as I retrieved the memories of this recent visit. To write, lie and roll amongst them, touching bones and flesh, and losing the page in the middle of it.
Fucked up,
we
measured it.
I'm asking you to lie and roll among them, touching bones and flesh, soaking up their smiles, their abundant love falling me, and left so easily to be found. And as one would at a graveside, silent and still I remained, with the anticipation of a bingo player, awaiting their return in this. Thank you.
Next up to the mic, we have Mr. Brian Cormodoro.
This is called Wake Me Up. Last night, I was having sex with someone I find to be physically repulsive.
What on
earth? She loves my genital bar. I was afraid her husband would come through the door at any minute and fucking murder me. My warts grew bigger and multiplied to the tune of her vagina that might have played any old instrument before me. And the really scary thing is, I was anxious to get it on. Fuck you, nightmare. Wake me up. Zimbabwe. Mugabe. Trying to speak poetry. The fear of getting it wrong. The fear of being stuck. terror in my body, pulsing. The fear of sounding like shit. Terror. Fuck that nightmare. Spirit. Please wake up. This next one I was working on for the last 2 weeks. You might have wondered why I wasn't reading. It's because of this poem. I had a hard time getting my ego out of the way, but I managed. It's called Tonight I Came to Listen. And here it comes. Thank you.
That's better than Jerry Murphy's one. That's better than Jerry Murphy.
Is that?
Jerry Murphy robbed his one, actually. Is that? $5.95 or whatever it is. Hey, John. Is it John? It looks like John. It is John, yeah. Hi, John. How are you? Do you want to say hello?
Yeah.
Alan said he didn't make his voice. What? Let's see. Okay. We've got one more person left. Unless anyone else wants to get on the list, just give me a wave.
Have I been
chased
with the vandalism?
Did we miss you, Jerry?
I think I was on
there. God almighty, that is the second time I've done this. Wasn't to you the first time anyway. The first time was to Sinead Ryan, and she came all the way down from Limerick, and I forgot. Let's get to her. God almighty. You're up next. This is Jerry Romero.
I thought it was because I took offense at the Trisha's taking the piss out of my house. I don't know if any of you have had the experience of carefully choosing a birthday present only to find the same present on sale all over the place shortly afterwards, and now you're worried that the recipient of the gift the things that you've just bought something to sale.
It's a terrible thing.
Tom Pierce and Trove the Harrogate Art Freisen and Dachreta are Fos Fane, Marigida Fall, and Muska na Serecu. Dílam Das and Dóihangach, Sáar Ali Art Cárahe, Euro 3 is an open hay, Sin Litriot a Slad Varga. A Bó Marín Gair Cárta, na Kenyas an Lár Cána, ar Fáis am Lán, Elistuhil, Birk, an Chachan Hanna. Stóchan is Mós Masaka, A real oak or shiny channel, a real dude, a screen over you, not a gaharsha, a gyanaha. Gabriel F. Nagak Davain, Tenorta, a ganuder. Bronsonus, Bra, Lord Brahan, the old data, Kalinuder. Akinish, in the account that I'm going to get my ears, Haran, the Kenya Stowe, a Bronsonus. Ovaska, I'm not going to be here. It's Chukigan Law, it's Nirin Dauphi, Rebecca Namaska Morgan, Luachar Bin, Rebecca, and Marika Dutta.
This next piece, when my
9-year-old son heard me practicing, he said to me, Dad, don't be embarrassing yourself. You're too old for that sort of stuff. But anyway, if you try and imagine that this is a real cool baseball cap, well, that's asking for too much. But anyway, it's a tribute to our commercial radio stations and the way that they've broadened our intellectual horizons and enriched our cultural life in general. Well, good morning, everybody. I'm glad you all tuned in to the funky sound of 98 FM. I'll be with you all the way until 6 a.m., so if you're an insomniac, I'll be your friend. Now, you'll hear acid house and you'll hear hip-hop, but most of all, you'll hear myself going on like this, and non-stop, and I can rap like this all night and day. I was thrown out of the cemetery for carrying on this way. If I've never been to Harlem, I really know the scene, so you'll like my music if you're a disco queen. I said, Reed, hey, how, what do you say? I'm Ireland's greatest rap and funky all-time DJ. Now some people say this accent never came from Ballybrogan. I said that's right, because I grew up in Cincinnati, Gogan. I tried to access mid-Atlantic as I could possibly be, because it sounds sophisticated to the Irish peasantry. Now if your love life is in trouble or you're suffering from frustration, just ring us up, we'll broadcast all your secrets to the nation. A special request and a big hi to Mary Carr from Castle Bar, from the guy she spent last night with in the backseat of the car. I said, Reed, hey, how are you today? I'm Ireland's greatest rap and funky all-time DJ. Now, the critics like to say that I'm a functional illiterate, but when they knock the station, don't you believe a bit of it? Our advertisers are content, the punters are pleased with our proven formula, kinky sex and sleaze. Our playlist is designed for people just like you, completely tone-deaf and with a low IQ. You don't know why I'm from Cork, bye. That's my sample of sampling. I said, Reed, hey, what do you say? I'm one of the greatest rap and funky all that time DJs. Now, when I go out, my mates to say that I'm a proper bollocks. I don't care what they say, they're just fucking alcoholics. I know that they're just jealous because they see me pull the purse. Everywhere I go, they come with me and her. They lick their lips and shake their hips. Sometimes they splash their knickers or mob me for my autograph. No, I don't like your sneakers. I really have a hard time keeping all of them at bay because they never will believe me when I tell them that I'm gay. I said, hey, I'm gay. Oh, what do you say? I'm Ireland's gayest rapping funky all that time DJ. And now if the phony accent is grating on your ears, and if your taste in music is for cheeks and reels, and you prefer sham notes or boring daggly D's, the next station down the dial, or the G, but if you like the rapping somewhere, then for goodness sake, stay tuned, and I'll be right back after this commercial break. I said, hey!
Third on the bill, like, I'll just skip right out of two. The last time we had one here, Jerry. Okay, is there another up for the mic? No, there isn't. We've got one person left, and then we're all going to probably have the same old Crane Lane, you know. Once they keep us out of here, which will probably be the next 10 minutes or so, or 15 minutes. Okay. Can we have Mr. Gore Harding? It's your time.
Very unfair enough to Bally, Gary O'Neill.
Shit. We're bending him.
Bally beating Bally. It's called eight, though. Don't be condescending, but happened to me all the time. It happened to me last night. I went down for 2 points. And it happened to me. Played there. You've got your United and your Rovers, but I feel broken and a wanderer. I am an exile. You've got your soap and your pot. But I feel unclean and homeless. I am an exile. You've got your safe harbour for generations. The blow in is an icy wind. I am an exile. You've got your weather and all its moods. I am always cold, so I can see the moon. I am an exile. That's that one. Sorry about that, Kerry. We went to Greece through the void one time, and we went to Delphi, and it was a fantastic night. We had a few drinks, and we went to bed early, but one of the lads stayed up, and there was a brilliant moon, and he tried to wake us up later on, just to happen. Delphi moon. The night we stayed at Delphi, the moon shone bright and clear. We marvelled at the landscape, still held less carried here. We sucked long from a Grecian urn, delving into Homer deep. And from Homer's land we slipped away into a blissful sleep. From there we heard a song so strange that nearly made us wake. Rise up, you wine-deep men, Apollo's wife that spake. Go feast your eyes upon my soul, my valley, mountain, moon. Rise up before the dawn sinks away to noon. But no oracle could move or stir. The three wise men who slept, Apollo's ghost, Apollo in the scuffs to off, and Dionysus wept. And weeping were the three wise men, realizing all too soon, Apollo's ghost was dead and gone, and was the midnight moon. Thanks.
Thank you, Roger. It's an amusing aftertaste, this river of kingly colour, an ocular delight, this stream of pure poetry, a vain aortic mixture of spirit liquid, that even evolved vampires overdose on blends of rich thick contradiction, of unrivaled breaths expired. And even as muses, pilgrim seasoned muses, issue the trail of purple dripping from tongue and teeth, a new harvest of mystery. And even as starved poets sip the mountain manor purple foam wine, dream drunk poets, pulse deafened, descend purply their seasoned lips. Thank you very much.